You ready for some coffee, honey?
Absolutely.
I'll pour.
Great coffee. I'm Dr. Ron Martinelli.
And I'm Linda Martinelli.
And we are talking
while married.
Well, what a wonderful dinner that was tonight.
That was exceptional and in such a cool place.
You know, the Casa Kimberly, which is a very famous home here in Puerto Vallarta, is the home of the romantic couple of Elizabeth Taylor and Richard Burton.
Right. So back in the day, when they were having an affair and were not supposed to be found out.
During the filming of the iconic movie Night of the Iguana, so we're talking about 1964 here.
Okay, you're much better at your years than I am. So they were having an affair, and so they each bought a home directly across the street from each other. But the streets here in the city are only feet wide. They're not like the streets that we're used to. So what they did is they built a bridge over the street from one house to the other so that they could get back and forth to each other without other people seeing.
Because they were having an affair.
Right. And eventually, when they did, you know, make it public and get together, they had these properties here in Puerto Vallarta for a very long time. And what a beautiful place that was.
You know, people will have to go on our Facebook site at Talking While Married to see the beautiful pictures of this restaurant, now called La Iguana, after the movie, and see how the movie stars lived back in the 60s. And by the way, in the 60s, Puerto Vallarta was simply a sleepy fishing village. And to see the opulence of those homes, which is now also has been turned into a boutique hotel.
Right.
With this amazing restaurant.
Right. And the restaurant is, it has very few tables. Sometimes you can wait months to actually get a table. We were just incredibly lucky to have called yesterday and grabbed a table. And then what we did is we called our really good friends here.
Dr. Jesus and his wife, Mila.
Mila. And we're able to have dinner with them, which I just really enjoyed. Haven't seen them for quite a long time. And, you know, just couldn't enjoy their company more. And let's talk about Dr. Jesus just for a second.
Because wait a minute. Okay, hang on. Okay. I wanted to mention a couple of more historical things.
Oh, good. Okay.
Because the houses that we were in, so Liz Taylor had the larger house, and Richard Burton had the smaller house.
As it should have been.
Across the street, the bridge is called La Puente de Amor, the Bridge of Love. And it's located, if you ever come to travel to beautiful Puerto Vallarta, it's located just up and behind La Iglesia de El Centro, which is the cathedral in the central district of the town, and just has an absolutely gorgeous view of the mountains behind the city, which are the Sierra Madre Mountains, and looking down over the ocean. And the entire upstairs where the restaurant is located has no windows.
And no air conditioning.
That's what I was going to talk about next. And of course, while we're here now, it's a little bit warm, and the humidity was there certainly. And we were pleasured to have the most beautiful thunder and lightning rainstorm last night during dinner.
Yes, and it was really, I mean, it was one of those teeth rattling type of thunderstorms.
Kind of make you jump out of your seat. Yeah, lightning storms.
It was, but it was absolutely beautiful, and it was a real treat.
And you know, just a word to the wise, sometimes in Puerto Vallarta, the electrical grid is kind of old. And so literally our power went out twice during dinner.
Right.
But it was all candlelit inside, so it was extremely romantic.
Yeah, it was really nice. And, you know, it's just really excellent food. And you could absolutely tell, even though I love the food everywhere in Puerto Vallarta, and I can honestly say that I've never had a bad meal in this town, that was a step above for sure.
And the service, of course, was just excellent.
Yes.
And you know, you just can't walk into La Iguana. You have to be invited in. Even though we had called ahead mm-hmm. and made restaurant reservations, we tried to get in the front door and it was locked.
Yeah, you cannot get in, and there's good reason for that. The reason that they do that is that with these immigrants coming up through Mexico from Nicaragua and Honduras and Guatemala and so forth, they, from time to time, have people that know that if you go to this particular restaurant, you probably have on jewelry and watches and have some money in your pocket. And they do not want anybody to be able to get into the restaurant and disturb their guests or rob their guests. Well, now, not that they have virtually no crime in Puerto Vallarta, but nor do they want any.
Right. But also, I think because the Casa Kimberly, where La Iguana is located, is such a famous place mm-hmm. for those people that follow Liz Taylor and Richard Burton, they don't want to be inundated with tourists while we're enjoying a spectacular meal.
Right.
But I just loved it. And I went around crazy taking pictures all over the place. So we hope you get on Facebook and Talking While Married and take a look at some of these fabulous pictures, especially that gorgeous picture of Liz Taylor that greets you at the top of the staircase as you ascend to the restaurant.
Right. And my favorite was, although it was all beautiful, my favorite was that bridge. It's just so cute. And you could just picture them sneaking across there at night.
And I've got some great lit pictures of that. Yep. But you know, Linda, I'm sorry because I interrupted you and you were going to talk about our fabulous friends, Dr. Jesus and his Russian wife, Mila.
Right. Well, you know, I mean, first of all, we really enjoy being with them. But Dr. Jesus is just such a skilled doctor. He specializes in maxillofacial surgery. And he's a dentist, an orthodontist, and so forth, but so much more.
He's also an MD, which is,
MD.
For a dentist to be also an MD, that's very unique.
He was trained in Mexico, but then he had occasion to go to Russia and further his training for some skills that they did not have in Mexico. And while he was in Russia, he met his beautiful wife. And she has a very interesting past. Not sure if it's something that we should be bringing out.
It's not that it's a bad thing.
No. But you know, she's Russian, and there are a few Russians in Puerto Vallarta, and we happen to know several of them. This is just such a unique union, but they're such a beautiful and fun couple.
Yeah, let's just say that Mila used to work for the Russian government at the time.
Right. So anyway, one of the things that we did last night with them was kind of do our little man on the street, because I'm so curious, and I know you are as well, as to how they feel about the same things that we spoke with Carlos about the other night. And I want to kind of review some of those answers with you, because it was really a different perspective a little bit.
And just in case you didn't catch our last coffee conversation, while we've been in Puerto Vallarta, we've been talking to various Mexicans that we know, workers and also friends, because we're so curious about a couple of things. Number one, their most recent election,
yes,
where they've elected a brand new president. And also their perceptions about the United States and Donald Trump and immigration and the wall and things like that. I mean, it's a real curiosity between our two nations.
And it's been an eye-opener for us, Ron, because the responses that we've gotten are not the responses that we expected.
Right. I think because even though we do a lot of media work, Linda, and, you know, of course, we're watching the news a lot, And most of the news, of course, that we listen to is a little bit more conservative, a little bit more fair and balanced news. We are still, as American citizens, still affected by mainstream news media, including the fake news media.
And this is one thing that, to a person here in Mexico, they also complained about with their media, especially during their election, where the news was put out about their president-elect that was fake news.
It was derogatory news because they had called him a communist.
And it was, the attempt was to make him look bad and not have people vote for him, just as we experience in the United States with President Trump. So really interesting that we're not the only people that play this game, but now we have a completely different education level than we had in the people that we spoke to in the past few days. So with Jesus, what we found was his opinions were much, much similar to the other people in that he's very happy about the new president. He feels like this is a man that can push them forward. And he likes President Trump as well. He's good with President Trump. What he's not so in favor of, as opposed to the other people we've talked to, is the wall. And we didn't really articulate real well why he didn't want the wall. He did mention that animals couldn't cross through the wall and migrate and so forth. And I'm not sure that there's a lot of animals migrating across where that wall would be.
In the United States, at least. But, you know, one of the things that I found fascinating about Jesus and Mila is that Mila is the more conservative of the two, and Jesus a bit more liberal. But we're also talking about two pretty educated people. And they do very well here in Puerto Vallarta, but they also travel internationally. And one of the things that resonated with me with respect to what Jesus had to say is he said, you know, I believe that they're just different solutions that have not been tried between the United States and Mexico with respect to reducing this illegal immigration problem.
Right. He does feel that more can be done. Now, interestingly, Mila is all for the wall.
Right.
She thinks the wall should be there. She also feels the same with Mexico because they have a lot of people coming up through their southern border, and that causes them problems the same way that it causes us problems when we have people coming up. Now, we all agreed that it's not the best of Mexico that's crossing that border.
That's true.
Right?
They're concerned about criminals, drug traffickers. But one of the things, and I think it's quite reasonable, just like we think about in the United States, the Mexicans are worried about the Guatemalans and San Salvadorians and Panamanians and Nicaraguans coming across the border and taking jobs away from Mexican citizens because employment in Mexico, of course, especially for those people that are unskilled and uneducated, is tough. It's tough to make a living in Mexico, especially with the depressed wages, and they don't need any more problems with compression on those few jobs available for lower skilled laborers.
Yeah, and you know what? I want to mention this because this is something that neither you nor I knew. You are a big proponent of the Bracero program that we used to have in the United States.
Right. Back in the 50s and 60s, one that we used for our agricultural needs in the United States. And of course, you know, I come from a ranching and agricultural family, a farming family. And back in the 50s and 60s, for those of us that are new to the conversation, we had a program with the country of Mexico where we would provide limited work visas for Mexican farm laborers to come across the United States. And they would apply for the visas, which were fairly easy to get in those days. And they would come in for 3 months at a time. And they would either work pre-harvest or harvest season. So they'd work for 3 months. They'd come back to Mexico. And then they would come back across to the United States 3 months later and go back. So in other words, they were able to work in our agricultural industry, in our farming industry, for about 6 months out of the year and have that money back in Mexico. But we wouldn't take their families. You know, we would not educate their children. There were no subsidies or entitlements for these workers, except the farms and agricultural companies would build housing for the Mexican labor. So they got free housing, but they were on their own with respect to meals and, you know, medical care and things like that.
What we didn't know, though, is that the money that was paid to those workers did not go directly to the workers. It went to the Mexican government.
And I didn't know that. And that's a big deal.
Right. Because the Mexican government never paid the Mexican workers in some part. Okay, maybe some people got paid, but other people never got paid. So that program fell apart. And that was something that we were unaware of until Jesus told us that the Mexican workers never got paid. Short of that, if we were to pay those people directly, then I think that that's a great program to reinstitute, because we need the labor in the United States. We want the labor in the United States. But what we don't want is all of these drugs and criminals coming over the border.
Right.
And everybody is not a criminal coming over the border, so don't misunderstand that. In fact, when we were speaking with our other friend Alex here,
our cab driver, who's done a wonderful job.
Yes. Alex had several brothers. By the way, he's one of 19 children.
That's a lot of kids.
Yeah. So Alex had several brothers that ran across the border, and they got caught, and they got immediately sent back. This was some years ago. So they got sent back. Then he had, I believe it was three brothers.
And a sister
that went over
legally
on visas. And actually, they have now become United States citizens, and they are very successful, each in their own right.
That's a banker.
That's how we want them coming.
Exactly. One is a banker who does very well. Another one is a general contractor who owns several apartment houses, and he's doing very well. And another one is, I think, an artist who's doing quite well.
And Alex is an artist as well.
Yeah. I mean, these are multi-talented people that we're meeting here. But, you know, suffice it to say that if we could reinstitute the Bracero program, where we would control the wages, give the Mexican laborers higher wages, but again, not allow the families to come across the border, not educate the children, not give the entitlements and everything like that, and we would give the money directly to the Mexicans, I think we would go far towards mitigating the illegal entry into the United States. Because really, the Mexicans love to live in Mexico, but they just can't make a decent wage doing that. So, you know what? I'm going to have some more of this great Mexican coffee.
Okay.
The goal is to deliver a message of truth, inspiration, and hope to the world, to unite people from all backgrounds and beliefs in an effort to advance humanity. News blogs, informative podcasts, and entertaining videos. It's AmericaOutloud.com, where the conversation never ends, with 24/7 streaming on our free apps on both Android and Apple. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
Tired of watching the same old sporting events? Well, kick it up a notch and get ready, America, for something you've never seen before. It's the new generation of Western superstars. Shorty Gorham's American freestyle bullfighting. Who will win? The acrobatic, tough-as-nails Western superstar or the meanest half-ton fighting bulls on earth? This is one of the most extreme sports you'll ever see in an arena. This is hand-to-horn combat on a level playing field. Go to ShortyGorhamAFB.com or find them on Facebook. It's bullfighting time.
I'm Dr. Ron Martinelli.
And I'm Linda Martinelli.
And we are Talking
While Married.
Thank you so much for joining us Monday through Friday evenings for our engaging and lively coffee conversation.
But now there's more. We would love for you to join us on Facebook at Talking While Married, where we post the pictures of the things that we talk about.
That's right. We'd love to have you both follow us and friend us on Facebook, Talking While Married.
We'll see you there, and thanks for joining us for coffee. How's your coffee?
I love Mexican coffee. You know, it just tastes so different than normal American coffee. And it's just wonderful after our wonderful meal this evening to be having coffee after our dip in the pool, right? Because it's a little bit humid today, and we just wanted to, actually, to tell the truth, we're probably a little bit sweating in those shirts and just got back, and we've got a one-acre pool, and it's gorgeous, and it was all lit up, and I just love being out there and listening to the ocean because it's right next to the ocean and hearing the waves crash and taking a nice dip in the pool and coming up for a nice steaming cup of coffee.
Yep, they turn the lights right out on us, too.
Boy, they sure let you know when it's time to go to bed.
Yeah. You know, one of the things that's interesting here is one of the questions that we asked people is, what is the workforce like here? Is there employment for everybody, or is it very depressed and there's a lot of unemployment? The answer, again, surprised me. Almost everybody in the city is employed.
And, you know, when we drive around and we walk around, and we've had opportunities to go into El Centro, which is the downtown area, on several occasions, because that's where we're having our dinners at night. It's a very vibrant community. It looks like everybody's working. You know what I don't see on the streets of Puerto Vallarta that I absolutely love? We don't see people begging for money.
Right.
Okay. Very, very few. And those people that we do see begging for money are usually handicapped people.
Right. Oh. Who really, really, really need it. But yeah, it is vibrant. In fact, I was thinking last night that it's kind of reminds me of a little Las Vegas or New York in the way that people are outside and they're living their lives outside instead of locked up in their homes here. So everybody's out. Everybody's talking with each other.
Tons of kids running around.
Yeah, the Malecón, which is the seawall, and there's lots of shops and lots of fun things to do there. It's just a vibrant place to be. You can't help but kind of be happy there. Now, the other interesting thing that I learned, when we were talking to our waiter the other night, he had a different perspective as a waiter. He was talking about one of the differences between the U.S., even though we give the Mexicans education and health care and money and all of these
subsidized
different things.
Housing.
Yeah, subsidized everything. Which, by the way, nobody has felt that we should do. Nobody in this town has felt that that is the right way for the United States to go.
And, you know, they're actually pretty surprised that we do that.
Yeah.
And they tell us that's a mistake, because if you want to keep driving illegal immigrants into your country, just keep providing them with all these subsidies, because who wouldn't want to have all sorts of free stuff? And that's what our waiter was angry about, because they're talking about now subsidizing, you know, Mexicans in this country with various programs with the new president. Of course, he's a populist president. He's not a communist. He's a populist. But he doesn't like that, because he says somebody's going to pay for that. That's going to come out of my own pocket.
And it's interesting that they get it. And actually, they look at us kind of incredulously that we are doing that in our country. Like, what are you, crazy? And we say yes.
Yes, we are. We are kind of crazy.
But the other thing that the waiter brought up, which I had never really thought about, but it's absolutely true. He said, you know, this town is a tourist town, right? So their employment really revolves a lot around the tourists. So they are required to, for the most part, to learn English, and they do. So really, almost everybody that you meet here that you're going to interact with as a tourist does speak English.
Well, it has some fluency in English.
Absolutely.
Which is a little different than you would see in the United States. We kind of get lazy in the United States. And, you know, we travel to Europe quite frequently, and we're always amazed that Europeans speak, you know, at least three languages.
Well, and they also learn English. And if you look at just Dr. Jesus and Mila, all of their boys speak 3 to 5 languages.
And, you know, I asked him last night during dinner, because I was so curious, because he's Mexican, she's Russian. And I said, hey, what language, and they speak English beautifully, what language do you guys speak when you're at the house? And I thought they were going to say Spanish, and said, no, they speak Russian.
Yeah, they speak Russian at home. So, yeah, that was an interesting answer. The other thing that the waiter brought up is that in Mexico, they will take our dollar, our U.S. dollar, where in the United States, we will not take their peso. So the waiter was a little bit miffed about that. He didn't feel that that was kind of even Steven, that they really cater to Americans here. But again, this is a tourist town.
And don't forget that, I mean, right now, for the time being, I'd say, the dollar is still the international currency, but we do a lot of things, which basically I'm against, where we over cater to the Mexican population that comes across the border, because it's always press one for English, you know, not press one for Spanish. And our Department of Motor Vehicles, books, and a lot of the voting stuff and everything is also in Spanish. I believe that if you're going to have these privileges when you come into the United States, you should learn our language and not the other way around.
Well, and to your point, you know, speaking of elections, we could never get away with voting here in Mexico as the Mexicans do in the United States, because we will not check IDs when we have our elections.
And they check IDs for every single person that is going to vote. And it's interesting because they hold their voting on one day, but it's on a Sunday, which I thought was very interesting, where classically our voting day is a Tuesday.
Right. They don't have early voting. They don't have all these mail-in ballots. The only ballots that get mailed in are the ones from citizens that are outside of the country that cannot
physically be here.
Yeah, can't. So and it was interesting because they thought it was a lot, but they said, yeah, we got in 1,000 votes from people in America and Canada that are Mexican citizens.
Right. Well, you know, one of the things that I thought was interesting was, again, that they vote on Sundays. And when you think about it, and we asked Jesus, why do you guys vote on Sundays? Because I know this is a Roman Catholic country and you guys are going to church and everything. And he says, look, it makes a lot of sense because we have the day off. So we're not obstructed from voting by going to work. And I said, wow, you know, that makes sense. Maybe we should change our voting day to like a Saturday.
Well, that does make sense. Yeah. I mean, a lot of things that they do here, this is definitely not a third world type of an atmosphere in this town here. There are some very, very smart people, and they really know what's going on in their government and in their politics.
And you know, let's talk about that for a second, because we've had several conversations about American history and Mexican history, and it is always interesting. We saw the same thing in Europe, Linda, but it's always interesting to me that people from other countries seem to know more about our government and our dates than we do as Americans, and that's embarrassing.
Well, it is, and you know, you and I had this conversation earlier today about why is that, you know, we just had a guy go out on the beach for one of the news shows and interview the kids on the beach and say, today is a holiday. What does this mean?
And a particular American holiday, what does it mean
to you, for example? And they didn't know what 4th of July, where it came from, other than that they get a day off of work and they get to go to the beach.
And how embarrassing is that?
That's terribly embarrassing.
But you know, it's interesting the way Mexican holidays are spun in the United States. For instance, there is a huge celebration in the United States for Cinco de Mayo, the 5th of May. And if you ask Mexicans in the United States or Mexican Americans in the United States, what is Cinco de Mayo? They seem to think it's their Independence Day, referred to as El Día de la Independencia. Well, that's not their day of independence. That is simply a battle of Puebla between the Mexicans and the French, when the French were coming in and trying to take over the country of Mexico. El Día de Independencia in Mexico is actually in September.
In September,
okay,
right.
So even the Mexicans in the United States get their days screwed up.
Well, what's interesting here in Mexico is that if you talk about Cinco de Mayo, they look at you with a deer in the headlights.
Because they don't know what it is.
They don't have any. Now, they they are definitely smart enough to know what happened on that day about the war with the French.
If you bring it up.
If you bring it up. But they don't. There is no celebration in Mexico. There's right. there's no day of anything for Cinco de Mayo here.
And, you know, I'll tell you the truth, okay, and even being facetious, but I think, you know, Cinco de Mayo was made up in the United States by the Coors Beer Company as a drinking day, because that seems to be what happens on Cinco de Mayo, even for Americans.
Well, I think that that's probably true. And, you know, there are many instances in our history where things that we consider to be something as fact have actually been made up for exactly those purposes.
You know what I thought was really interesting is the other day when we were speaking with our good friend, you know, Carlos, who owns a tour company here, he not only knew what the importance for the 4th of July was, but he actually knew where our American Constitution was signed.
And who signed it.
I was absolutely blown away. I mean, you could probably go to 90% of American citizens and probably 98% of American students and ask them that question, and they would not be able to give you an answer.
Well, and, you know, that's a huge subject with me, because we are taking our history out of our schools, and therefore our kids don't know. I mean, in our day, Ron, we kind of had that history pounded into us at school. I went to Catholic school.
And I was a U.S. history teacher a long time ago.
And we had a lot of history learning, and we needed absolutely to do the whole memorization and so forth of what was happening in U.S. history. And now it seems like they don't really get that in school, and nobody knows their history, which is a really bad thing for the United States. Where we go in the world, here in Mexico, in Europe, in different places in the world, they know their history of their country so much better than we know ours.
But, you know, I will say something along that lines, because you raised a really good point, sweetheart. And when I was talking with Jesus last night, and we were talking about the history and the lack of teaching history, Jesus says, sadly, that is starting to happen in Mexico, where they are not teaching the kids as well about Mexican history as they used to. And that's a serious problem, because for any nation, if you lose your sense of history and your context of history, then you've lost the substance of what your nation is all about.
Well, and more than that, you've lost a roadmap to where you should go in your future, because only from history can we tell what mistakes we made and can prevent making those same mistakes again.
Well, you know, we were talking about being in Europe last year, and we're going to be there again because we had such a great time. But we were in Germany, and we were in Nuremberg, Germany, which has huge historical significance during World War II. And the Germans have an entire museum of remembrance, which basically quantifies and historically puts into perspective the rise and the fall of the Third Reich, mm-hmm. which was the Nazi regime. And it is a state law that by the time you reach a certain age, and I think it's that transition between middle school and high school, is that the schools are mandated all over the country to transport the students in buses to their Museum of Remembrance. And I think it's either 3 or 5 stories. It's a huge building.
Yeah,
it takes all day to go through.
It might be more. Yeah, you're right.
It was a big, huge building. Mm-hmm. And they go from the bottom floor all the way up to the top floor. And the idea is question authority and never forget what happened to our country and what we did to other people.
Right. Which is going to help in the future with that type of a system not happening again. But we need to remember that in the United States, because we have also been through a lot in our history, and we need to remember our history and know why we did the things that we did and how they came about and how to prevent things from happening again. And unless you have that historical starting point, you have nothing. I mean, even in Rome, which to me is one of the most fascinating cities in the world.
And one of the most beautiful.
Yes, but just because of the rise and the fall of Rome, where you had such a thriving civilization.
When the Roman Empire.
Right, and then through a lot of different things regimes, bad leadership,
wars,
inbreeding in the leadership. So lots of different reasons, and everything fell apart. And really, the whole world at that point, Ron, the whole world that existed at that time stepped backwards.
Yeah, and by the way, during the Dark Ages, and there's a reason why they call it the Dark Ages, for, what, 300 or 400 years, which is a long time
in
the history of humanity, civilization, they completely degraded and got rid of artwork, got rid of intelligent people, the architects, all of the things that make a country, the learning, the books, the scrolls, and all those things were burned, and they lost a huge sense of themselves.
Right, and it has taken, I would say, till now to even bring that back. So history is so important, and I can't stress enough how much I wish our schools would do a much better job with history in teaching our kids today.
Well, you know, I see it in the law enforcement side, where you see resistance to authority, resistance to law enforcement, and that is because, in large part, we have stopped teaching civics and history and government to our students. And the history that they get is some amalgamation and gross misrepresentation of what our history really is. It's gone to a more of an all-inclusive, politically correct, vague and ambiguous,
right,
everybody involved history. And that isn't the way United States history was at all. Believe me, we have our warts. We had our serious problems. We had slavery. We had violations of civil rights and discrimination. And that is all bad, but an important part of American history that we don't want to have repeated. So unless we teach the not only the history, but the context of history and our government and the role of law enforcement and the judicial system and everything, then we have no national identity, and we will continue to make those mistakes.
Yes. Well, you know, you were speaking just a second ago about law enforcement, and I want to mention here in Puerto Vallarta, that we've said that there's very little crime here.
And I hang out with some of the cops here, too. Yeah. I love that.
If they have any crime at all, it would be things like maybe pickpocket or...
Right, purse snatching or something like that. There's certainly not violent crime or armed robberies or burglaries and things of that nature.
But we do have the police that will ride by in their vehicles, and they've got all of their automatic weapons and so forth. It's really different than how we do in the United States.
Well, and that's primarily just as, showing the colors, as we say, to keep the cartel people out of this beautiful city, because it is absolutely one of the safest cities in all of Mexico. Hey, well, listen, my coffee is down. I want to refill. Let's continue this conversation.
Okay.
Think back to the last time you felt healthy and energized. The best times of our lives occur when we're at the peak of our health, sleeping better, full of energy and focus. We know that fades with age, and you might be feeling the effects of aging as low energy and poor sleep. But it doesn't have to be that way. There haven't been any nutrition systems designed to rejuvenate our bodies as we get older, until now. Healthy Cell Pro is the only multi-nutrient system that impacts the building block of your body, the cell. Created by anti-aging expert and Nobel Prize nominee, Dr. Vincent Giampapa. Award-winning Healthy Cell Pro cuts through the complexity of nutrition supplements by simply giving you the purest ingredients, filling dietary gaps to nourish your cells and enhance your quality of life for optimal performance. Visit HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for an exclusive discount, or call 844-869-9958.
Well, you know, sweetheart, one of the things that I personally love to do when we're here in Puerto Vallarta is sit out on our patio and look out over the ocean and look at the lights of the city. I just love that view.
Yeah, it's really pretty. And, you know, very often they do fireworks out there and we can see them. I haven't seen them too much this week. I think I've only seen one or two go up.
Well,
but anyway, it's just that's something that I really enjoy.
Well, I think I've had enough of fireworks for tonight with that lightning and thunderstorm.
Yeah, that was that. Well,
I'd actually rather watch that.
And I'm sure that that's why there was no fireworks tonight, because that was a one heck of a rainstorm.
I'll tell you what, when it rains here, it does not fool around. Reminds me of Hawaii. It also kind of reminds us sometimes times of when we're in Texas, because we get the same type of thunder and lightning, which is quite exciting to look at.
Yeah, it was quite beautiful.
Hey, you know, one of the things, you know, we've been talking about immigration tonight over coffee, and one of the things that just bothers me is how uninformed American citizens are, and especially with this new spin about closing down ICE, and ICE is some sort of repressive law enforcement agency. Listen, we need ICE. We need the Immigration and Customs Enforcement Agency. Just an example that just happened the other day of how stupid Americans are with this conversation and getting sucked up emotionally into this fake news conversation about the separation of families and this and that, and ICE picking on immigrants. Was ICE had a search warrant that they were running in the city of Oakland, California, which is up near the People's Republic of San Francisco, right across the bay in San Francisco Bay Area. And so the neighbors saw a bunch of ICE vehicles and federal agents pull up and go up into a house and start taking people into custody and bringing them out. So they immediately run home, they make up signs, and they, what do you think, within 30 minutes or so, they have 100 people and they're out in front of this guy's house and they're protesting ICE, picking on and taking their neighbor immigrants into custody. Oh, to find out the search warrant that they were conducting was for a juvenile sex trafficking organization that had embedded itself into that Oakland neighborhood and had basically kidnapped and were trafficking, sex trafficking with children. And even when the protesters were told that, they still were coming up with these stupid and ignorant excuses of why ICE needs to go. I don't get it. Can you help me with that?
No, I can't help you at all. And it is a fact that I don't think that most Americans understand what ICE does. And to that point, they also are saying that ICE is responsible for are the kids being imprisoned on the border, which is just fake news in the first place. That has been happening since the Bush administration. Nothing is different under the Trump administration. But either way, ICE has nothing to do with that. So they don't understand. That's Border Patrol's
function.
They don't understand that the functions of these different branches and parts of our government and our law enforcement agencies. People need to get educated, and we say that all the time, is that if you're going to talk about things and protest, know what you're doing.
Well, it's hard to call, to carry out a cogent conversation with people that are uneducated, and they have the time to educate themselves, they won't, and then they get caught up in these ignorant, emotional conversations that really don't mean anything. But, I wanted to mention that when we are talking with our Mexican friends, we're having dinner, we're having coffee, we're driving around in town and talking with average Mexicans, they look at us and saying, what is the big deal about this? Because the Mexicans do the exact same thing with all the Central Americans that come into Mexico with their families. They don't put those families together. They separate the adults from the children, and they have a much quicker deportation system. I mean, those people are back in their own countries within 2 days.
They don't fool around with it here, and also they don't enable it by giving them, free education and free health care and so forth. They do not want them to stay, and they don't even want them to come over the border. So everything is handled really more as we should handle it in the United States.
Well, they basically take them and put them on a bus within 2 days. They'll house them for a couple of days, put them on a bus, and send them right across the border and tell them, you come back, you're looking at prison time. And I'll tell you what, Those immigrants that come from other people, they believe the Mexicans when they tell them that.
Well, and not only that, but the prisons in Mexico...
You don't want to be in one.
Yeah, are definitely not like the holding stations we have in the United States where people are saying that we are, being... what's the words that they're saying? It's terrible. It makes it sound like we're imprisoning
these
children.
We're putting them in concentration camps.
That's just a horrible thing to say because they don't have any idea, again, historically, what a concentration camp is.
Well, it's interesting because there was recently a story in the media about a survivor of a concentration camp, Auschwitz, in Germany. And he said, look, as a guy that's been there and he was there as a child, you don't even know what you're talking about.
Well, and that's the problem. But you know what, Ron? I have some good news today.
Well, let's hear about that.
Yeah, actually, there's quite a bit of good news, so I love that. The first thing is, we were talking about schools a little bit ago, and you and I have been big proponents of that we need more mental health education and response in this country. We used to have it. We don't so much anymore.
It's such a huge issue in the United States. And Linda, 80% of my death caseload is people with mental health problems. So it's absolutely huge. Probably one of the most pressing problems in the United States.
Well, it's interesting because I had the fortunate experience when I was in high school of actually working in a mental health institution. And, this was before they let everybody out because they didn't want to violate their civil rights. Crazy because these people, well, that's a terrible word for me to say. These people did not need to be let out. They needed help.
And, for some of our coffee listeners in the United States, and of course, we're both originally from California, we would have large psychiatric hospitals. And those people would get committed that had serious mental health problems. Mm-hmm. And that's where they would get their treatment, their medication. And they were there for an indeterminate period of time until the doctors, the psychologists and psychiatrists could assess them to being able to be reintroduced into our society. And because of court decisions and things like that, going back to the mid-60s, they closed down a lot of those psychiatric hospitals.
And they put the people on the streets.
And it's absolutely disgraceful.
It is.
Because then look at all the problems that we have now with our homeless population, of which many of them are suffering from serious mental health problems. And that's when they end up so tragically and unfortunately on my caseload as a dead person.
Right. And what these two schools have done, one in Virginia and one in New York, or actually the states, not the schools, but the states of Virginia and the state of New York, have reinstituted mental health education for high school students. So they're teaching them about the things that can happen to people and about the things like bullying and all the different things that go with mental health, your physical health, how it relates to your mental health, things to be looking for, depression, those types of things.
Right, the different mental health presentations, depressions, mania, schizophrenia, paranoia, bipolar disorder, all of these things. And also autism,
right?
And some of those ancillary problems, those psychomedical problems that many Americans suffer from.
Right, and they're teaching them to recognize these symptoms, and hopefully this will enable these kids down the road to do a couple things. One, to be nicer to people with mental health issues. Two, to help recognize them within their friends and family, and hopefully more people can get help. Now, in my opinion, every single state and every single school in the country should do this, as long as they have a program that is, a program that is not a politically correct program, but a program that really teaches what to be looking for and what to do about it.
Yeah, there has to be some substance there. One of the things that I thought was interesting about your mental health news story was that the driving force to create the legislation in New York
and Virginia
was from kids, was from high school kids, and not from legislators, not from professional people. And that's sort of embarrassing, where the kids become the adults, all right?
Well,
that becomes the driving force because kids want it done. But, one thing that you mentioned, bullying, And on my show, A Thread of Evidence, on America Out Loud, the very first program we did was about David, who committed suicide, a beautiful 16-year-old boy in Texas, in San Antonio, that committed suicide because he was so depressed over cyberbullying. And people, especially meaning adults, but also kids that get involved in this stuff, they have no idea how serious cyberbullying and even physical bullying, verbal bullying, you know, that's non-social media initiated, can affect people. It just ruins your psyche.
It does. And, you know, so the Virginia bill was introduced by kids. The New York bill, just one point about it, is it's been languishing since 2015. So now we're in 2018 and they finally got it passed. And that's just a commentary about, again, our government and how slowly it works to get things done for the people. That's kind of ridiculous, in my opinion.
And, you know, suicide, which is a sign of mental health, suicide ideations, people that commit suicide at the teen level has jumped dramatically since 2006. As a matter of fact, there has been a 50% increase in teen suicide since 2006. And if that doesn't tell you that we have a serious mental health problem in the United States, I don't think anything else will.
No. And so kudos to these schools. I hope that all the rest of the states start doing the same thing.
I agree.
So speaking of schools, there's a young man, his name is Dean LaBarba, and he graduated from medical school, and he was just fresh out of medical school, and actually went to Loma Linda University, and he was on a 12-hour flight from Zurich to Los Angeles when the lady next to him said that she wasn't feeling well. Now, there was 300 people on this flight, Ron. He was the only doctor on board. Before he could even do anything, she fainted. And he took her pulse, and she had no pulse. So he jumped into action and started doing some chest massage and so forth. That did not work. So he laid her across some seats and gave her
CPR.
And he got her blood flowing again. He got her back to consciousness. He pretty much nursed her throughout the flight and saved her life. And so this person who just had graduated, had no experience yet in a job, and he was in the right place at the right time to save this woman's life. So
that kudos to him.
Great good news story.
Maybe even one of our heroes of the day.
So this being the time of year where we have the 4th of July holiday and everybody across the country is doing fireworks.
Our own Dia de Independencia.
Yes. And, you know, some areas of the country have droughts. Well, one of those areas is Aspen, Colorado. So you have all those beautiful trees there and forests. And we have a drought going on. And they did not want to light up fireworks because of the fire hazard to the...
So what did they do?
So what they did, just leave it to American ingenuity, right? They did a synchronized drone light show in the sky, synchronized to music.
So they have what, scores of drones?
They used 50 drones.
Wow.
Programmed.
I love that stuff.
To patriotic music. And they did the whole show that way.
I think that's just amazing. We have that drone that we use in our office. Maybe I'll start doing that with it.
Well, you know the other thing that they said is that the animals weren't spooked because there was no big booms going off.
Right. You know? And, you know, that's really important with people that have animals like we do. You don't want to have fireworks going off because you freak them out. And also, you know, there's been stories of actually American soldier veterans with PTSD. So you got to be very considerate because, you know, times have changed.
Yeah. And you know what? It's funny because our dog, Desi, could care less about the fireworks. She just rolls with it. But our daughter's dog, our son and daughter-in-law's dogs, oh my gosh, they would want to run through a plate glass window if you let them.
They're sort of cowardly compared to Desi. Boxers are, you know, they're very type A dogs.
Speaking of dogs... there is a hero dog. We have a hero dog, of course, because they are. And Todd is the dog. He's a golden retriever. And this woman, Paula Godwin, had been out for a morning hike with her two dogs near her home in Anthem, Arizona. So what do you think comes up on the ground?
What's got to be a rattlesnake or something if it's Arizona.
Yeah. And Paula almost stepped on the snake, and the snake reared up and was ready to bite. And her dog, Todd, jumped right in between her leg and that snake and got bit in the face.
Oh, man, that's rough for a dog to get snake bit like that. What happened to the dog?
Well, the dog is fine. She rushed the dog and got the dog antivenom. And his face looks quite puffy and swollen, but he actually is going to be just fine. And she is absolutely grateful that her dog, you know, had the sense and the protective instinct to jump in between her and the snake and save her.
Well, you know, for our listeners, and we know this because we're ranchers, there's actually rattlesnake training that you can do for your dogs, where you can have a trainer come and teach your dogs to avoid getting bit by rattlesnakes. But that was a little different. I think that dog would have done that anyway, because that's a hero dog.
That was a hero dog. And you know, Desi was out the other day, and there was a snake out there, although it was not a poisonous snake. And, you know, I was tempted to go take her near that snake to see if how she would approach it, because I need to know that, because we do have poisonous snakes in Texas. But sure. I didn't do it.
Well, listen, I have absolutely enjoyed our coffee conversation for tonight. And I just love being in beautiful Puerto Vallarta, our second home. We've got one more day to go. And let's look forward to tomorrow.
Okay, I'll meet you in the boudoir.
And I'll be there.